This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
Distress and Crisis Ontario. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to our podcast, DCO Discourse. We're really grateful to have you here. Today, I am joined by Caitlin Doyle, my coworker and the Communications and Marketing Manager at Distress and Crisis Ontario, and I'm going to say longtime friend of the podcast, return guest, Sabrina, my bestie, therapist extraordinaire. I could say many, many kind things about her, but I know she'd feel embarrassed, so I'll stop. And we're coming together today, just the three of us, just to have a conversation sort of centered around International Women's Day. We thought it would be nice to come and share all three of our unique from each other perspectives of what it's like to be a woman in today's day and age, why it's still important to have something like International Women's Day and to have these kinds of conversations. Just really have an open dialogue and a conversation together about just what it's like these days in the world that we live in. So to kind of start us off, I'll share a little bit of where my perspective comes from. Obviously, I have some very privileged parts of who I am in terms of being a white woman who lives in Canada, who has a solid job. I have a roof over my head. I have a family who I am close with. I am a single mother to two. I definitely have some things that have set me back in life, but all in all, I am in a very good, privileged position in where I am. And that is kind of, I think, the perspective of motherhood and the perspective of raising both a daughter and a son is what I'm going to try to bring into this conversation, and kind of the unique challenges and joys of both of those things. But especially talking about womanhood, trying to set my daughter up to have the best future that she can and be strong in who she is, and trying to, I mean, my son is still very little, but I'm already having the thoughts of, how am I going to make sure that he knows how to be respectful to women, how to have good relationships, how to not be, one of those guys that kind of makes us have to have conversations like these? How can I try to help make sure that he's going to be a part of these conversations in a positive way? So that's kind of the perspective that I'll be bringing today, and I'll pass it off to Caitlin and let her kind of share about her perspective.
Yeah, thank you, Caitlin. I mean, I think likewise, I'm also coming from a fairly privileged position as well. I'm a white, cisgendered woman, and again, middle class. I too have a roof over my head. I live in a great apartment in Toronto. So my perspective is more coming at it as, you know, a young woman kind of hitting that weird second puberty kind of thing going on, kind of exploring more of how my body is changing now in this second stage. I thought that I would still have certain attributes that I had at 16, which now are very rapidly changing. So kind of having to grapple with that, and especially with my other close female friends, I think we're all kind of figuring that out and finding a bond through sisterhood and exploring what that looks like now as a young woman is very scary, but also very exciting. So I'm bringing that perspective in. And also, aside from DCO, I also am an actor artist. So the perspective of aging is very prevalent in that, because I feel like there's so much pressure to kind of hit your streak by 25. And after 25, you know, Leo doesn't want you anymore. The industry doesn't want you anymore. Is the perspective that I think a lot of people still carry with them. I do think the industry is changing in a lot of very positive ways, but in other ways, you know, you reach a certain age as an actor, as a woman, and then you're a mother. Until then, you're a grandmother, and those are kind of that's kind of what you get. And so it's, though they're just roles, it also plays an influence on other generations and what they're seeing women be. So that's also a perspective that I'm taking into today. And I'll pass it over to Sabrina now.
Yeah, I guess I'm also bringing in a really privileged position. Like I'm a, master's educated, white, cisgendered female, in a hetero marriage. And I'm really super lucky to have the life that I do, regardless of all of the ways that, I've endured my own trauma or background or, experience of living. It is really just this privileged position of being able to say, okay, like I know from my perspective what it's like to be a woman, but I also can't speak for disenfranchised and marginalized communities where, I am the predominant culture that people look to say, hey, you're in leadership or you're, at the head of the table. And as much as we often hold that to, the white, cis male, it also does come back to me. And I understand that and I appreciate the privilege that there is in that. And I also don't want to say that anything that I say is, I don't want to take away from the voices of people who are marginalized. And I don't want to suggest that my experience is ever, equivalent to or even remotely close to similar, of the people who are put in a position where they just don't get that same privilege. And I mean that all across the board, people who even identify as female born, male, or people who are put in a position where their culture is seen as this kind of threat, or, I am really lucky to have this position. And also I feel a huge amount of grief, that is not the case for all women. And so whatever I say, I hope it comes across as like, this is just my perspective. And I don't want to speak for all women because my experience isn't that of all women. It's a really privileged position. But I do come from a therapist perspective. I primarily work in mental health, when it comes to, anxiety disorders, depression, those kinds of things, but also more expansive. Like I've worked in education. So I would say I'm coming more from like a professional, career-oriented lens of womanhood. And just trying to be, have an honest perspective to the whole, what is it like to be a woman in society? It's a lot. It's an interesting process, and it's a privilege to be a woman because there's so many wonderful circles we get to exist in. And also at times it can be a lot of grief and a lot of hard times. So yeah, hopefully that gives you guys a little bit of insight into at least where I'm coming from.
Well, I kind of laugh, even the joke that you made there, Caitlin, about if you're too old for Leo, right? In case nobody has the context for that, it's kind of a, I do think mostly online and entertainment news niche joke where Leonardo DiCaprio tends to date much, much younger women at this point. And it kind of seems like he has this cutoff point where once you reach a certain age, you are now too old and he will move on to a new relationship. But the fact that all three of us heard you say that, Sabrina and I both kind of like laughed to ourselves, like, yeah, okay, like the fact that that's just considered a running joke, like that says so much about the world we live in, right? That it's just, oh yeah, if you're too old for Leo, right? And just throw it casually out into conversation. And how are we accepting of that, right? Like, whereas if it was a woman who consistently dated younger men and had the same kind of, like, she would be ripped apart. Like, and everybody would know about it and it would be much bigger news. And it wouldn't just be a joke that people throw into conversation, right? Like, and I think that's a really interesting starting point to kind of yeah, look at how each of us maybe does unpack that in our day to day, right? Like, I, again, with a 13-year-old daughter, she told me she had her first kind of, and it's just one of those things where, like, even the fact that I have to say her first, she had an experience where she was like walking through a parking lot and she was with like her dad and her cousin, and there was a group of younger guys there. And one of the younger guys started kind of bugging her and kind of saying like, oh, like, do I know you? Like, can I get your number? Can I talk to you? Do you have a boyfriend? Right. And obviously my daughter felt uncomfortable and she just kind of laughed it off and ignored them and walked away. But then even when she told her dad and her like male cousin that she was with, they also kind of laughed it off and they also went like, oh, you know, like boys being boys kind of thing. And the fact that she didn't have anybody there to validate that experience for her until afterwards when she and I talked about it, like, we shouldn't have to just laugh these things off. We shouldn't have to put up with them. Like, it should not be a conversation that we have to have that she felt uncomfortable and nobody walked through that with her, right? Like, and I don't know, like, I don't even know how we talk about it. Like, it just is so heartbreaking that, yeah, we're in this era where realistically, like, oh my goodness, I am so lucky I was not born 100, 200, 300 years ago. Like, I am absolutely someone that they would have burned at the stake as a witch. I know this. That is who I am as a person. Like, I am so glad I am not in fear of that in this day and age. And yet we still have these things that we, like, our basic safety things that we shouldn't have to worry about that we're just expected to brush off. And it's just such a heavy thing to carry all the time.
Yeah. I even think too, like, just simple things. Like, I think as we grow older too, we become more aware of, okay, this person's talking to me in, you know, not very respectful manner. I'm just going to walk away and leave it. But then there are things that we can't do for fear of, you know, worse things happening. Like, if I'm going on my run, like, I don't go past a certain time. Whereas I have male friends who are like, well, you know, I love running at night. This is, you know, when it's not hot, it's all of these wonderful things to them that they just oftentimes don't see. Obviously, not that there's not danger there necessarily for them, but I don't think there's not that fear that's so deeply instilled from you from 13 years old, even earlier, right? So I think that's just, it's very sad. It makes me feel very saddened to hear also that it's not just a unique experience for one person. Like, it really is. Everyone has these experiences, and you remember your, like you said, first experience with it. I mean, at least I do remember my first experience encountering something that made me feel like, ooh, that was a bit, I've never felt this way before. This felt gross and almost dirty and scary, like, all mixed in one. It's very strange, very strange.
It sounds really jarring, right? Like, it's this really kind of, it's very isolating too, because then the other thing that comes with being a woman is also that, you know, kind of learned mentality of like, I have to feel guilt or shame about this. Did I look a certain way to bring this attention to myself? Did I cause this? Did I, you know, and inherently we do know in our core, no, I didn't. Like, I didn't do anything. Even if you were outside fully naked, like, you didn't do anything to ask for that attention. However, what you're taught is, you know, whether it's school or like home or culture or religion or faith or, you know, wherever you're raised in the circles you're raised in, there's some message that says, hey, no, quiet down, make sure you look good, make sure you look acceptable and accessible and that you're, you know, functioning well in society. And at the same time, somehow also have a voice and make sure that you also feel guilty for having that voice, because be quiet. Because listen to the men in the circles that you're in. And it is kind of like, I mean, the Barbie movie, as much as it's super niche, really did hit on like the dichotomy of you get to be this wonderful, strong woman and also, you know,
get penalized don't for all be the best parts of you.
Like, be strong, but like, to be a woman is to be like meek and also brave and strong and delicate, and requires this adherence to kind of like expectations while still in the feminist realm, or like even just International Women's Day, being able to say like, I'm in the constant pursuit of freedom for generations that come after me. And I think it's this fully involved experience where it's both beautiful and encouraging and also exhausting and terrifying. But that kind of makes me think of why there's, you know, why are there more men or more women than men in therapy, where like, of course you would. This is the first time that someone's going to sit with you and acknowledge you for the expansiveness that you have to exist in. And so I don't even think it's so much about like there's more mental health issues as much as there's just this freedom of like, oh, finally, somebody's just going to hear me. Like, somebody's going to make space for all of me without judgment. And I think from my perspective, being a woman is to just like constantly ebb and flow with the waves of both this beautiful joy and excitement of being all of these wonderful things, and also the extreme grief and fear of like, oh my gosh, I have to be all of these things at the same time. It's like a full-time job on top of your full-time job. That's crazy.
There's that wonderful poem, the women holding things. And obviously I don't have it memorized to recite it, but if you do take a look at it, it is just exactly that, women holding and carrying all of this plethora of items and parts of life that men don't often think about, generally. Again, with the home, and there are certain tasks that I think women, at least I think, that I myself delegate as like, this is a woman's task, so I have to take this on, in terms of, you know, cleaning and cooking. Those things to me seem like they are the woman's task. So when my partner takes them on, sometimes I get a bit overwhelmed because I think, oh, well, that's supposed to be me doing it, even though it is, we're both supposed to hold these things. Like, these are both things we should both be holding and helping each other carry, but it's just years and years of this learned behavior that women have taken on. And it's about unlearning these things we need to hold, and we can let them go or share the weight with someone else.
I can read that poem quickly. I did pull it up.
Yeah, give it a read.
The only thing I don't know is the author, but it goes, what do women hold? The home and the family. And the children and the food, the friendships, the work of the world, and the work of being human, the memories and the troubles and the sorrows and the triumphs and the love. Men do as well, but not quite in the same way.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful poem. And I think it's also just like really telling of the totality of being a woman. Like, it's just, like I said, it's expansive, and it's also kind of a little bit, it's a little bit scary, like, to think, oh, you know, even when a baby is born, you know, and it's hard too, because we are also living in this time where we're trying so hard to make this space and life acceptable for everyone. So like, let's say somebody's born as a male and they transition to being a female. Okay, let's honor you in that, and also acknowledge what is your experience of being a woman. And, you know, people who are born male and stay male and decide to stay in their, you know, experience, how can I honor your experience of just not knowing any different? And I think that that's a really hard place of being a woman, is going, I have to acknowledge that men inherently will never know the added stress that it is to exist as a woman. And I actually can't fault them for that, as much as I want to. I want to be able to say, hey, look, do you notice how much I'm doing? Do you notice that I'm scheduling birthday parties and I'm buying Christmas gifts? And, you know, I'm the one who took the dog for a walk because you forgot, or, you know, and that's no shade to men, but it just was never on their radar. And so to all of a sudden, you know, get into a generation of people where we we just have this anticipation of like, oh, do better. Well, that's also not fair. And so that's where I say, like, this privileged position that I get to be in of like having the education and seeing it from such a like a macro lens of everything all at once. I feel so lucky because at least when it does happen to me, I'm able to go, oh, they don't know any better. And I think if I, you know, can teach any of my clients and the patients that I work with anything, it would be that I really hope that when something happens that is adverse to them, when something happens that is harsh or aggressive or feels like it comes at your womanhood or your own independence as a person, that you can go, oh, what that person did or said had nothing to do with me. And it was 100% a reflection of their own experience. And I know it's really hard to sit in that place and to not place blame, but also to be able to go, oh, okay, they don't know any better. And so I get to teach them. And that's kind of a hard role because, you know what, like nobody signed up for it. But again, you also didn't sign up and wake up one day and go, yep, today I would like to be a woman or a man or this or that, right? And so it's kind of just making, I don't want to be cheesy, but like it's a little bit like you got to make some lemonade out of the lemons, right? So, and that sounds, you know, I don't want that to sound dismissive. It's a big role. And some days you just have to grieve it, but it's being able to go, okay, I can grieve this and I can push forward. And those things can exist at the same time. The same way that you can be a mom and you can be a friend, and the same way that you can be, you know, a woman. And you can also be like, you know what, today I just don't want to participate and I'm just going to stay at home and not do the things that women in theory are supposed to. I don't know. That's kind of, I guess that's my perspective on that, maybe.
I think coming back to being a mom to a boy, that's one of the spaces where, and again, being somebody who spends a lot of time on the internet, I am hesitant to use the phrase boy mom because it has such a negative connotation in some ways now in some circles and things. But being a mother to a boy, he's three, and I'm already thinking about how, like, what are the ways in which I can best set him up to not have to put that kind of load on his future partners. If his future partners are female, I don't know that about him yet. But if he is, no matter what, he's someone that is going to exist in a world that also has women in it. He's going to have friends who are girls. He's going to have teachers and coworkers and bosses and doctors and everything in his life. There's going to be women around. So how is his mom, can I best set him up to not have to put that kind of load on the females around him, right? And I know in no way with either one of my children am I going to do things perfectly. It's impossible for me to do things perfectly. They are both always going to make mistakes and we will work through that together. And I think they both know that when they make those mistakes, they can come to me with them and I'm never going to judge them harshly. Obviously, if it's a mistake that warrants a consequence, there's going to be a consequence, but they're never going to be worried about whether or not I still love them. Like, they're never going to be afraid to come to me with these things and have these conversations with me is kind of how I think I can do the best for them. But it's again one of those things where I feel almost extra pressure to make sure that I raise him not in the right way. I hate that kind of turn of phrase, but that I do the best that I can to set him up to be successful in these things, right? And it's almost more pressure than I feel raising a girl, like, because at least with her, I do have shared experiences, right? At least with her, I have that understanding. I don't have that for him. I have no idea what it's going to be like for him moving through the world. I don't know how to frame these things from his perspective. So it's really, really interesting. And I mean, yeah, there is definitely also the factor that there's a huge age gap between my two kids, and that also makes it a little bit interesting. He also has an older sister who I know will hold his hand and walk him through a lot of these things that I maybe couldn't have relied on if they were closer in age. But yeah, it's such an interesting, like, he's only three and I already am thinking about these things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, yeah, it's again one of those pieces, but I absolutely love being his mom, right? Like, it's not like it's something that takes away from the joy of being his parent. It's just another one of those things that comes along with it. So yeah, it's just so, yeah.
And I think too, the other pressure of that, and obviously I myself am not a mother, but I am imagining that this would be a large pressure because I see it even with my younger siblings, is that they're growing up in a very different world than even I did. Even my siblings not even being that many years apart, this whole technology thing. I mean, I grew up with a pocket where there was no real tech. Like, I didn't have my first iPhone till grade 8 and all of these other things. So I wasn't really on the internet. But now, I mean, there's the whole, again, the running joke with the iPad kids. Like, people are just consuming so much all the time. Like, that, regardless of boy mom, girl mom, like, it's just such a different world. And the amount of information and the type of information that these young kids are consuming, it's hard to keep up with. I mean, I find it hard to keep up with. My younger brother will say something to me and it doesn't even sound like English. Like, it's like a weird new word, and I feel consistently that I'm trying to keep up with these new ideas and the way the world is shaping is just, I feel like I'm constantly running, just out of breath all the time. So I think, yeah, there's just also that pressure to connect with that younger generation, because it's so different than I think what we would have grown up with.
Yeah, and there's also the whole, my son starts school in September, and every single kid in his class is going to be a COVID baby. And this is going to be the first year that will be the case. And it's really interesting thinking about how that's going to shape things as well, right? And how different this cohort is going to be, because it seems like there's two extremes and nothing in the middle of either kids who are like, my three-year-old is one of the smartest people I know when he's three, but it's because he's been surrounded almost exclusively by adults for his entire life. He never went to a traditional daycare. He never, like, all of his siblings and cousins and everybody in his world is so much older than him. And so as such, like, he's a very emotional, intelligent, like, well-spoken, just like, he's like a tiny human already, and he's three. He doesn't act like a toddler very often. Like, he very much is still one, but it's different. And then on the other end of things, you have the babies and the toddlers who were so isolated that kindergarten is going to be so overwhelming for them, right? And I feel like there's just going to be this extreme blending of those two groups of kids and very little middle ground, and it's going to be super weird. And it's like this whole other layer of, like, just generational change and generational, like, I'm gonna say the word trauma, because COVID was super traumatic for a lot of people in a lot of ways. Like, these are babies that most of the people they met first in their lives were wearing face masks. Like, we've never had that before, right? Like, it's so, so interesting, but it's a whole other layer of things, whole other conversation. But it's just one of those things that I know
you
that
you think about,
right? Like, I am thinking about it. I am analyzing it. I'm having these conversations. And most of the time when I say that to women, they're like, oh yeah. And when I say that to men, they're like, oh, like, never even thought about that. Wouldn't have crossed my mind. And I'm like, yeah, of course not. Like,
right? That's kind of, I feel like it gives me a little bit of grace for when, I'll use an example and I'll put my husband on the spot, but like, I love him with everything in me. And it gives me a little bit more grace for when he does things that are just kind of mindless. Like, you know, sometimes he will just leave stuff in his lunch pail overnight, or like, you know, he'll go to clean something off the counter and totally miss a spot. And that sounds so small and minuscule. And I know it sounds very particular. And I know I've talked on a previous podcast about having OCD, but I truly do think it is also part of this, like, level of excellence that women come to. And not that men are not excellent, but they are not told that they have to be to exist. They are just told, yes, your existence is acceptable and wanted and valuable. And women are this different breed of people truly that are like working for their acceptance and their acknowledgement. And the hard part about that is I want to say to every woman that I work with, even my clients, my friends, my, you know, my family, I want to say, look, you don't have to work your values intrinsic the same way that like a crumpled $5 bill is no different in value, is the same as you. You can be shot down as many times as happens. It doesn't change your value. And at the same time, I also know that if I say that, I'm being so disingenuous, because I know how much I work every day just to feel like I am acceptable and to feel like what I've done at the end of the day makes me feel good. Because it's actually this constant, like, I don't really care if anyone else thinks I'm really good. It's my own expectation of myself. And it's brought on, yes, by the societal expectation of just being a woman, but it's kind of now become my own kind of, you know, theology about myself of like, oh, be excellent. That makes you, you know, successful and purposeful and valuable. And it's really hard to separate yourself from that, because then it doesn't change that I, you know, I do want to be excellent in all areas of my life, in fact, but I want to do it out of a place of I get to, not I have to. And that's a really hard place to, like, you can't reteach people that. And the primary age of people coming in for therapy is like, you know, 17 to like 35. And at that point, you've already been socialized in a huge way. So I can't say to my clients who identify as female, oh yeah, just, you know, just get rid of that belief. Like that's foolishness. You know, I want to be realistic and say, yeah, I get it. I spend a lot of time there too. And you know, again, come back to that dichotomy of like, honor it and feel the grief and the weight that it holds. And also like honor the privilege it is to be this excellent, you know, eccentric, extreme human being, and just go with it, allow it to happen. Like the spaces that you're meant to be in will accept you for that excellence and eccentricness, and the spaces that are not meant for you, honestly, you don't have to stay there. Don't waste your time there. Actually, it's not worth it. Find the places where you're, you know, hugeness and the extremeness of being a woman is welcomed. And in that, hopefully it makes it a little bit easier to exist, you know, instead of constantly being like, oh, how can we do this better? How can we fix this? Be like, okay, how can I exist and be okay with where I'm at right now? And hopefully that just takes a little bit off of the plate of things that you have to do, and things instead are things that you get to do.
I think that's probably an excellent spot to wrap us up today, because I don't think we can say anything that's going to be more impactful than that in this conversation.
Oh, that's really sweet. I feel like it's funny because I know that I will go away from this again in the prime perspective of being a woman. I will go away from this and think of all of the things that I could have, should have, would have said that would be different. And for the sake of all the people who will listen, I won't do that. And I'll spend some time actually doing something that is taking care of myself instead.
Excellent. Well, hopefully this conversation has given some validation to the people who are listening if they need it. And for all of our listeners who do identify as women, hopefully it's helped you feel, if nothing else, less alone in the experiences mm-hmm. that you've had. To our listeners who identify as male, hopefully this has given you some insight into just a very brief scrape of the surface of the things that we are going through in our day-to-day as women. And again, a very, very small, well, I say small, but a very privileged perspective. There are so many perspectives of this conversation that we cannot speak to, that would carry even more weight, I think, than what we touched on today. But either way, thank you for listening, Sabrina and Caitlin. Thank you for having this conversation with me. I think we all could go on and on and on for a really long time, but again, for the sake of our listeners, we won't. And we hope that you will instead join us again next week with another podcast. So thank you, everyone.